I was turning to go when Mr. Hanshaw called after me. "Hey, mister, I remember something else my dad used to do. Shout in their lugs. He got many a cow up that way. I'm not very strong in the voice. How about you having a go?" It was a bit late to stand on my dignity. I went over to the animal and seized her by the ear. Inflating my lungs to the utmost, I bent down and bawled wildly into the hairy depths. The cow stopped chewing for a moment and looked at me inquiringly. Then her eyes drooped, and she returned contentedly to her cudding. "We'll give her another day," I said wearily, "and if she's still down tomorrow, we'll have a go at lifting her. Could you get a few of the neighbours to give us a hand?" Driving round my other cases that day, I felt tied up inside with sheer frustration. Damn and blast the thing. What the hell was keeping her down? And what else could I do? This was 1938, and my resources were limited. 30 years later, there are still milk fever cows which won't get up. But the vet has a much wider armory if the calcium has failed to do the job. The excellent Bagshaw hoist, which clamps onto the pelvis and raises the animal in a natural manner. The phosphorus injections, even the electric goad which administers a swift shock when applied to the rump and sends many a comfortably ensconced cow leaping to her feet with an offended bellow. As I expected, the following day brought no change. And as I got out of the car in Mr. Hanshaw's yard, I was surrounded by a group of his neighbours. They were in festive mood, grinning, confident, full of helpful advice, as farmers always are with somebody else's animals. There was much laughter and leg-pulling as we drew sacks under the cow's body, and a flood of weird suggestions to which I tried to close my ears. When we all finally gave a concerted heave and lifted her up, the result was predictable. She just hung there placidly with her legs dangling, whilst her owner leant against the wall, watching us with deepening gloom. After a lot of puffing and grunting, we lowered the inert body, and everybody looked at me for the next move. I was hunting round desperately in my mind when Mr. Hanshaw piped up again. "Me dad used to say a strange dog could allus get a cow up." There were murmurs of assent from the assembled farmers, and immediate offers of dogs. I tried to point out that one would be enough, but my authority had dwindled, and anyway everybody seemed anxious to demonstrate their dog's cow-raising potential. There was a sudden excited exodus, and even Mr. Smedley, the village shopkeeper, pedalled off at frantic speed for his border terrier. It seemed only minutes before the buyer was alive with snapping, snarling curs. But the cow ignored them all, except to wave her horns warningly at the ones which came too close. The flashpoint came when Mr. Hanshaw's own dog came in from the fields where he had been helping to round up the sheep. It was a skinny, hard-bitten little creature, with lightning reflexes and a short temper. He stalked, stiff-legged and bristling, into the byre, took a single, astounded look at the pack of foreigners on his territory, and flew into action with silent venom. Within seconds, the finest dogfight I had ever seen was in full swing, and I stood back and surveyed the scene with a feeling of being completely superfluous. The yells of the farmers rose above the enraged yapping and growling. One intrepid man leapt into the melee and reappeared with a tiny Jack Russell hanging on determinedly to the heel of his Wellington boot. Mr. Reynolds of Clover Hill was rubbing the cow's tail between two short sticks and shouting, "Cush! Cush!" And as I watched helplessly, a total stranger tugged at my sleeve and whispered, "Has they tried a teaspoonful of Jay's fluid in a pint of old beer every 2 hours?" It seemed to me that all the forces of black magic had broken through and were engulfing me, and that my slender resources of science had no chance of shoring up the dike. I don't know how I heard the creaking sound above the din. Probably because I was bending low over Mr. Reynolds in an attempt to persuade him to desist from his tail rubbing. But at that moment the cow shifted her position slightly, and I distinctly heard it. It came from the pelvis. It took me some time to attract attention. I think everybody had forgotten I was there. But finally the dogs were separated and secured with innumerable lengths of binder twine, everybody stopped shouting, Mr. Reynolds was pulled away from the tail, and I had the stage. I addressed myself to Mr. Hanshaw. "Would you please get me a bucket of hot water, some soap, and a towel, please?" He trailed off, grumbling as though he didn't expect much from the new gambit. My stock was definitely low. I stripped off my jacket, soaked my arms, and pushed a hand into the cow's rectum until I felt the hard bone of the pubis. Gripping it through the wall of the rectum, I looked up at my audience. Will two of you get hold of the hook bones and rock the cow gently from side to side? Yes. There it was again, no mistake about it. I could both hear it and feel it. A looseness. A faint creaking, almost a grating. I got up and washed my arm. Well, I know why your cow won't get up. She has a broken pelvis. Probably did it during the first night when she was staggering about with the milk fever. I should think the nerves are damaged, too. It's hopeless, I'm afraid.